What's welcome back to This Week in the Association. I'm joined once again by Kevin Lucco. Kevin, a lot of stuff going on in the off season, a lot more than we're used to at this particular point of the season, but one team that doesn't seem to have been as active so far is the St. Paul Saints. What do you think's going on with manager George Samas here?
I think George is sticking to his general philosophy of not divulging his hand, so to speak, early in the year. I think he's going to be patient once again and see who's available after Major League Baseball camps, and guys start getting released or reassigned or whatever. And I think that's when we'll see many of his moves made. I think he has made some moves that they're just not official yet, so there hasn't been a release or anything. But I think he's sticking with his method of kind of waiting and seeing what's out there, and we'll see how that works for him.
George has brought in four infielders to this point, returning Brady Shoemaker, Noah Parrillo signs, Josh Allen was traded for, Jake Hager was with the team for about 5 minutes before moving on to Milwaukee. What are your thoughts?
I wonder if he gets a hat.
For real. What are your thoughts about these particular moves and how they benefit the team?
Well, I think it's a guy like Prio and Hager. It sounded like he was going to be a middle infield type, and I think the team needs to be strong up the middle. I thought last year with a guy like John Kristofferson, he was a good glove at shortstop, but as good as the glove was, it just really, his lack of offense from the position just kind of made the Saints, basically they just made him a 8-man batting order, and Kristofferson was almost kind of like having a pitcher spot. But I think in this league, it's imperative that you're strong up the middle, good center fielder, a good catcher, and then second and short. So I thought that was a good signing. And generally, George's teams have always kind of been strong up the middle. So we'll see who he gets to surround the new guys with.
I think we're both pretty excited about the addition of Parrillo, who had such a monster year a couple of seasons ago in Sioux City and played well last year at Double A.
Yeah, I was really kind of surprised he was available. I don't know what caused release from what I believe was the Padres organization, but yeah, it was a shocking signing. But I think the fans in St. Paul will enjoy seeing them play this summer.
A couple of things around the Saints we want to talk about. They had during the Red Bull crashed ice and the Super Bowl and things. They had a big super slide out there at the stadium. I understand you got to ride that.
I did not get a chance to ride it. I was out there for it. It was kind of crazy. Like, I stopped on a Saturday afternoon and I was there at 1 o'clock and was told by Sean Aronson there wasn't even any time slots open until 6 o'clock that night. It was just a really, really popular attraction. Helped get Spire involved with it because there was a lot of work involved with it between as the guys out there were telling me, I think they wiped out every Mills Fleet Farm in the metro area for inner tubes for people to slide down, and they had to bring in snow from Afton Alps, and there was a lot of work involved. I guess the area of the infield where they landed, they're going to have to pretty much replace that area because all the wear and tear from that. So it was all worth it. Sounds like they're going to do it again, make it an annual thing with the St. Paul Winter Carnival. So always good to find a way to keep people coming out to the ballpark even in the off season and keep the team, keep the Saints in everyone's mind even when there's no baseball going on.
Also, if Sean Aronson decides to give up broadcasting, he's ready to be an amusement park director, I'm thinking.
Hey, while we get, well, talking about Sean Aronson, we should take the time to congratulate him on his 100th episode of his podcast, Voice Behind the Voice.
Great broadcast to listen to for you out there. So you'll enjoy
and
that for sure.
Boy, his 100th episode, being able to land Joe Buck, I thought that was quite an achievement. So congrats to Sean, and best wishes on 100 more episodes.
We also want to mention on the St. Paul Saints, George Samus, huge New England Patriots fan. Our condolences to him on his team not pulling off the Super Bowl victory.
Yeah, there was a lot of us in Minnesota that were pulling along with them for the Super Bowl, too, after the way the Vikings and their fans were treated by Philadelphia fans a couple weeks before that. And you know what? I'm talking about that. I kind of just got to thinking about how different it is between NFL and the American Association, other than obvious reasons. I've done several road trips where I've gone to other ballparks in the league, and there has never been the kind of vitriol, the kind of hatred that you see in Philadelphia. The thing I guess I kind of like about this league is that if I go to a different ballpark and see people see me with the Saints hat on, they're more likely to start a conversation with me. I've gotten to know a lot of really neat people throughout the league. And it's just the opposite of what's going on in Philadelphia. I mean, I don't get it. People throwing beer cans and that just because of what they're wearing. It just really kind of feels like it sets society back a little bit. But like I said, with this league, you don't see it. I think we all kind of see ourselves as kind of like a brotherhood of independent baseball. And I'm glad to be associated with that and not the NFL.
Yeah, I got to say that some of those cities are in the Northeast, and not to be disparaging about them, but New York, Philadelphia, areas like that, fans can be way over the top about that. And I can't even fault that, too, because Dodgers fans got crazy with Giants fans on a couple of occasions, and it's the major league level of stuff has really gotten obnoxious for fans, I personally think. But we don't have to deal with that.
As Jerry Seinfeld once said, all that argument over laundry.
Yeah, for real. Absolutely for real. Well, let's head back around the league there, Kevin, and begin with the Winnipeg Gold Eyes, who lose a huge portion of their lineup from last year. Josh Romanski going to Mexico, Wes Darville signing with the Dodgers, and Sean Fleffner, David Rome, and Casey Turgeon deciding to retire. What is this team doing?
I think Rick Forney is getting a little more turnover than he anticipated, but first of all, Romanski goes to Mexico, I'm sure upsetting many of the fine young women of Winnipeg. And a chance that he won't be around to have to adhere to the own rule that he created about bowling over catchers, which has been known to many as the Romanski rule. Sean Pleffner, I was reading up on him, and he just became a father recently, and in a story written about him before last season, his goal was to get back to the Major League organization, and it didn't happen in Winnipeg. So I'm guessing maybe he saw it was time to kind of choose a different career route. So as we know, in independent baseball, guys leaving to Mexico can come back and they don't like it down there. And sometimes guys retire and they get that itch again and they come back. So as of now, yes, all those guys are gone, but don't be surprised to see if one or two of them pop up.
The big thing we've seen so far is they've kept together the majority of this pitching staff. Victor Capion re-signed a couple weeks ago. Kevin McGovern a couple days ago. We know that Charlie Rosario's coming back. Edwin Carl's coming back. Mikey O'Brien's coming back. They add Andrew Sohn back. And we're expecting Reggie Abercrombie. So this team should still be pretty good, I would think.
Yeah, for considering the losses, they're also returning quite a bit of their core of good players. So it's not as devastating as maybe they're going to make it out to be up there. There's a lot of teams that like to have those kind of quality of players coming back, so they got to consider themselves a bit blessed.
Heading on to Sioux Falls, we look first at their outfield group. Jabari Henry, Ty Morrison, Chris Grayson, and Dan Model signed for this season. That's a pretty good group right there.
Yeah, it's nice going into the spring training, I guess, and kind of knowing who your outfield's going to be.
They also bring up a lot of adding pitching staff to the team. There, Mike Myers has re-signed Dylan Thompson, Ryan Fritzie, Bo Hellquist, Nick Blank re-signed back. What are your thoughts about what you've seen so far in their pitching staff?
Well, the signings have been good. Thompson had an incredible year last year and kind of faded down the stretch. But a guy like Hellquist, he got better as the year went on, and I believe that was the case with Blank too. And often in this league, you kind of see guys, if they come in as a rookie or an LS1, they get better as the year go on. But if they come back the next year, then it seems like they take that next step and become even better. And I can see that happening with the guys they're bringing back.
My apologies. I think I said Nick Blank when it's Nico. So my apologies about that. Moving on to the Gary South Shore Railcats, they bring back in a lot of guys that were core members of the team: Andy DeJesus, Alex Crosby, Colin Willis, Alex Gunn, Dan Miner, and then add Jimmy Heck, and have done some things, some nice things to improve on this team. I know that Greg Taggart likes to kind of take a few seasons to build up the team to try to make a championship run. Is this team in a position, because of the style of play and they've had these guys for a few years, where a championship run is a serious possibility here?
Well, you can never count it out, and if he can kind of get the guys to supplement the core that he already has in place, I really wouldn't be surprised to see it. I guess it's kind of like being a college recruiter. You got to go and get guys and sell them on your style of play, sell them on playing in Gary in a spacious ball yard. It's not attractive to guys that want to go hit 20, 30 homers a year, but if you can get the guys to believe in the system, yeah, you can build yourself a powerhouse and a championship team.
We wanted to talk about an interesting promotion that the Gary South Shore Railcats have for this upcoming season.
Oh, yes, yes. I love this one. They are going to do, there's a ticket package involved with every Saturday night, or I'm sorry, Wednesday night. It's the Office ticket package based on the show The Office. And all the promotions on Wednesdays are going to be, have some kind of tie-in with The Office, and they will have a special jersey they wear that looks like the sport coat and shirt of Dwight Schrute. I really wish I lived closer, because I'm a huge Office fan, and I wish I could take in a few of those nights.
We move on to the Chicago Dogs, where we'd like to say that a lot of stuff's going on, but it's really not.
I haven't even heard from Charlie.
Yeah,
if that tells you anything. I thought he would have a lowdown for me on what the team's going to look like. I thought I would have got that postage due letter from him, but I haven't heard from the guy in a while.
I think all we know at this point is that they have a manager, they have a president, and they have a player traded there. But after that, I don't think there's much that's gone on with the team so far.
Yeah, Butch Hobson might be taking the same approach as George Samus, too, and trying to build the guys around players that get released in spring training. And if so, well, then you got yourself a little recruiting battle between St. Paul and Chicago.
Absolutely. We do know that the stadium is coming together, though.
Yes, they did put their first seats in. There's a picture of you. Go on Twitter and look up the Chicago Dogs. There's a picture of the owners sitting in the first seats that were installed in the ballpark. So gradually, it looks like they're getting the impact field ready to make an impact.
Heading on to Fargo-Moorhead. You were commenting to me a couple weeks ago about this team's ready for spring training right now.
Yes, Michael Schlack kind of did the, it's kind of the anti-George Samus, and he seems to want to have his guys in place right away and kind of go into spring training with a general idea of what his roster is going to be. I guess for guys coming in, it's kind of nice to have job security and familiarity of the ball club and the city. So we'll see how this approach works for the first year manager. And maybe, you know, with it being his first year as a manager, maybe it is better for him to have guys that he already knows. As so with it being his first full year, I'm sure it's going to be things he's going to have to learn along the way and not have to deal with a ton of player turnover. Kind of might help him. It'd be one less distraction for him as he's trying to pick up on how things are done.
Well, it's kind of interesting, not just him, but I think we've seen a lot more players, a lot more teams have already filled out a huge portion of their roster to this point, which is kind of unusual for the league.
Yes, it is. I guess when you think about it, in the past, teams haven't done it because players are holding out hope that, well, maybe I'll get signed, maybe I'll get signed. Well, what's the difference if you're signed by an MLB team when you've already signed with Fargo? Their contract's not going to take precedence over an MLB team. So why not sign with the indie team and at least know that you got a home if you don't get signed, as opposed to just sitting out there as a free agent and hoping there's going to be an opening? I know I was reading on the social media on Facebook, Michael Schlack kind of commented about how if players are going to hold out for money when it comes to independent baseball, they might find themselves without a job because there's only so much money. Well, if teams are playing within the rules, there's only so much money to go around. And if you're holding out to try to make a payday out of independent baseball, you just might find yourself without a team.
We also want to add congratulations to Josh Buchholz, who becomes the executive director of the league.
Yes, I am so happy for Josh. I have known Josh since 2004 when, through Bill Tyler, I got to meet him up in Fargo and become a colleague of his ever since. And, you know, for anybody that's looking at baseball as a career path, I think you look at Josh Buchholz and it just goes to show you that hard work and perseverance can pay off. He started with the Fargo Moorhead Redhawks as a clubhouse manager in 1996. Think about that. Clubhouse manager to now being like the second in charge of the entire American Association.
Yeah, Mike Vec told me once that the great thing about minor league baseball is that you're selling tickets 1 year and 3 years later you're the GM. It's really that kind of business if you want to stay in it for a while. The interesting thing about the Buchholz situation here is that I was under the impression, I was told at the owners' meeting that the American Association had following the season, that the head of umpires, the head executive of the American Association, and the commissioner had all resigned at the end of that owners' meeting. But I'm understanding now that umpires and Miles Wolf, the commissioner, are staying around the league. I don't know exactly what that means other than Dan staying in as the umpiring, but I got to tell you, it was kind of a shocker to hear that these guys were returning.
Well, it could be just for 1 year or two as Josh is getting his feet wet. You could see it where maybe it's good to have some stability down there, or up there, I should say. Good to have some stability and have a Miles kind of teach Josh the ropes as it would be as far as running the league. And I don't know, maybe Miles does end up sticking around and Josh kind of works under him, or maybe he gets handed the reins eventually. I guess it'll be a wait and see deal, and the league's not going to play their hand as far as what their intents are, so I guess we'll have to find out, as everybody else does, as to what the league leadership's going to be in 2019 and beyond.
Heading on to the Wichita Wingnuts, a lot of changes going on around the team. The biggest one that we're looking at right now is general manager Josh Robertson retires. He's still staying around the team to help build it. Brian Turner, though, taking over as the new GM. Congratulations, Brian.
Yes, indeed, congratulations. And there's another case where he kind of learned the ropes under Josh, and now he's been handing over the wheel to the ship, so we'll see how that goes. I don't imagine there would be much of a difference in the way things are being ran there, so I don't think it's not going to be a different Wingnuts organization. I'm sure they'll be just ran just as well as they have been since they've been in the league.
Piggybacking off of something you said earlier, Brian began as an intern with the team and is now the general manager, so you can rise up the ranks here without a doubt.
That's fun to see that too. You know, because a lot of times as a fan, you see a guy as an intern and you get to kind of watch him or her as they work up the ranks. Although I didn't know him at the time, Chris Schwab, the Saints assistant general manager, was an intern in 2004. And there's pictures that John Kuhn, a really good baseball man. If you get a chance to talk baseball with John Kuhn, you can learn a ton as far as promotion and just about minor league baseball in general. But anyways, John Kuhn posted some pictures of 2004 Chris Schwab with John's young kids. And yeah, it's just amazing. There's Chris as a intern, and now he's assistant GM of one of the more popular teams in independent baseball. So, folks, if you want a job in baseball, work hard. The dream's there. You just got to work for it.
Absolutely. You don't have to be a player to have your dreams reached in baseball. That's for sure. You and I have looked over the signings so far for the Wichita Wingnuts, and I think both of us have been a little surprised by the people that have joined the team so far.
Yeah, it kind of seems to be a hodgepodge of players, and some of them are guys that didn't even play last year or were with a major league organization. But I'm sure they've got their connections, and these players probably come in with good references. So we'll see how it all works.
The big one that I did want to mention in talking with Josh Robertson was Luis Jimenez, who will play first base for Wichita this upcoming season. 6'4", 305 pounds. Josh told me he actually had to have a special uniform made for Luis. They're expecting huge home run numbers.
From what, the mascot? Or
yeah, seriously. It might take that because I think 4X or 5X shirt or something is what they need here. So that should be interesting. The additional
they won't have to hold him on base.
No.
He's not a threat to steal.
And I would say that every catcher in the league is glad that you're not allowed to run over the catcher this season, because that's not
right.
The guy you'd be holding the plate for. We also do want to mention about the Wichita Wingnuts that the team is kind of in limbo at this point as to what will happen for 2019. The city mayor gave some assurances that they were looking. They had a window of 90 days at the beginning of December to work with an affiliate club, and he gave a few different timelines during that period where we were going to have a team in Wichita by the middle of December and the end of December and in January, and now it's supposed to be March 1st. So what that means for the Wingnuts, they're playing out the season with everything they've got, but from my understanding from the organization itself is that we don't really know, nobody really knows at this particular point what is exactly going to happen. So this might be the last season for Wichita Wingnut baseball.
And what the mayor is doing in doing that, he's also sabotaging the Wingnuts, because if you're a fan of Wichita Wingnut baseball, how do you decide whether you want to invest in season tickets again when you're thinking, well, why should I buy tickets to watch these guys when I'd rather save my money and have an affiliate team here next year to buy tickets for? So, and it just makes it tough for the Wingnuts to sell advertising, to sell season tickets, when locally they can't even give their advertisers or fans any assurances that they're going to even be around after this season.
I think the part that I'm kind of distressed about myself is that I don't think the city is understanding how the quality of independent baseball in the last, what are we looking at, 5 years now? There have been four stadiums built in this league alone. Three of those teams were brand new teams. It wasn't like they were bringing somebody in or that they had already a team there and they were building a stadium for, but they specifically built a stadium for a brand new team, which says to me that independent baseball is a way to make money or at least have a good quality baseball.
Well, I think the problem is that they also have had affiliated baseball there in the past, so they've always just kind of said, well, that's the benchmark, that's the kind of baseball we should have. The same thing with Amarillo, where Amarillo never accepted independent baseball either. So yeah, the markets are getting, new ballparks are also the ones they've never had affiliated baseball, and they have accepted independent baseball as being a good quality product, but these people, these markets that have had a taste of Major League Baseball affiliated teams, that's what they want, and they've just never accepted anything less.
It's too bad. Well, let's head on to the Sioux City Explorers, where we first of all start with Nate Sampson returning back to the team.
Yeah, like we were talking about earlier, it's good to develop a team up the middle, and boy, if you're going to try to fill up a shortstop spot in the American Association, I can't think of anybody any better than Nate Sampson.
We're really hoping he gets off to a hot start. Last year he was close to signing, I think, to go to Arizona, but then got injured, and that kind of shattered his chance to return to affiliate ball. So we hope that he gets another shot this season. We look around at the pitching staff here so far that manager Steve Montgomery has put together, and it's quite a group at this particular point. He's got some quality lefties in Hunter Ackermann and Ryan Horstman. Brian Ernst comes out of retirement to join the team. He's got some good fireballing right-handers. Could this be the 2015 Sioux City Explorers, or are we just too early to have any idea about what this team might come up with?
Well, that's a pretty high bar right there, but I think what we saw with the Explorers last year, pitching was a downfall of theirs. They just never really had – they had some good arms in the bullpen, but their starting staff was kind of in limbo most of the season, and it just makes it hard to really – kind of get any flow going when guys are kind of coming in and out. You're putting guys, taking guys out of the pen, putting them in the rotation and vice versa. Pitchers are, they're like anyone else. They kind of thrive on having a routine. And I think what Montgomery is trying to do is solidify his pitching, and then we'll see about the hitting and we'll go from there. But as we know in baseball, good pitching is hard to find.
Yes, it is. Speaking of pitching, we move on to the Lincoln Salt Dogs, who, after several attempts to try to work out the finality of the Tommy Mendoza deal, acquired Tyler Herron, who was 9-3 last year in Fargo. I actually think this was the best deal that they could have possibly gotten.
Yes, that was a really shrewd move on their part. Herron was his second tour of duty with Fargo. He had another one before where he got signed by the Mets early on. I forget what season it was, but yeah, he'll thrive in a market like Lincoln, and he's the kind of arm you kind of want to build a pitching staff around.
Lincoln also has re-signed a huge number of the core players for their team last year. Kurt Smith, which we would figure would never go anywhere else anywhere. Anyway, Cesar Valera, Brandon Jacobs, Christian Ibarra, Nathaniel Maggio. I'm saying that right.
Maggio, we were kind of discussing that earlier, but
I'm going to go with Maggio because I think that's what Kevin said, and he's usually right. So,
well, now come on.
they've got the core in here to really make another run towards the playoffs.
Yeah, that was a pretty good core to get back, as long as those guys produce the kind of numbers they did last year. But like we said, after I know, like a guy like Maggio, he was a rookie last year. And he didn't have, like, huge power stats, but he hit well for average, and I think the power will come with him. And the other guys are established players that I don't see any reason why they wouldn't be able to replicate the numbers of last year, and it should be a force to be reckoned with.
The one guy we're excited to see how well he performs in Lincoln this season is Brian Smith, who was one of the starters and pitching coach for Salina last year until coming to Lincoln late in the season. He had a tough season, but you know, what's it going to mean when he's got, you know, good outstanding manager, quality organization, great defense behind him?
Not to mention a home.
Yeah, true, yeah. Not living on a bus all year long. So.
Right.
It was kind of
strange to see that there is going to be a Salina Stockade again this year. They're going to put together a team, and they're going to compete in the Can-Am League, kind of filling a spot there. I guess they need some teams there to fill some games in. So the Stockade live on. I don't know if there'll be many guys from last year's team, but there will be a Salina Stockade team, once again, with no home games.
Well, that's a interesting choice for the Can-Am, but okay, you know, hey, it could work for him.
Yeah, geographically, I guess it don't make any sense.
Yeah, why you're calling yourself Salina doesn't really make sense. You could just be whatever at that point, particular point. But
Right.
heading on to the Kansas City T-Bones, they bring in Art Charles, and with the return of Kevin Keyes and Zach Walters coming back from the Royals organization, this 3-4-5 part of this lineup is going to be ridiculously good.
Yeah, you're going to have to pitch to one of those three guys, I guess, or two of them. But we're seeing now that pipeline between the Can-Am League and Joe Calpietra. Art Charles was an all-star first baseman for him 2 years ago, so they'll be reunited in Kansas City.
Crazy. The Texas AirHogs, the big news around them is that 13 Chinese national players that should be in the 2020 Olympics are joining the Texas AirHogs for the season. That should be a really interesting team.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see who else are going to put around those guys. And I'm sure they've been trained in one style of baseball. And will it mesh with American players? And are we going to see a divided clubhouse amongst the local guys and then the Chinese players? So there's several things that could go good, and then, yeah, there's going to be some things you're going to have to work around there.
We know that Billy Martin Jr. will not be returning as the manager. He will stay as player personnel director, but not managing the team at this particular point. Heading on to the Cleburne Railroaders, we were talking about kind of the Saints and the Chicago Dogs being, you know, kind of waiting to the last moment to signing. Carlos Pimentel signs with Cleburne. That's the first player that we're aware of that's under contract.
Yeah, it's hard to say. There could be guys like we talked about the Saints where they've made deals with it, just haven't got around to finalizing contracts yet. But we'll see. Maybe they also might be taking an approach like Gary where they might be holding out for some younger guys too. So we'll see what happens with the Railroaders.
One thing you've talked to me a lot about over the last few months has been the Southwest League, and I'm kind of wondering your thoughts on how that might be impacting Cleburne at this point.
Yeah, you have to wonder. Right now, no news, I would say, is not good news. You're not really hearing much about the markets coming in for the Southwest League, because I guess my conspiracy theory all along was that Cleburne and Texas were going to join the other teams in the Southwest League, and the great American Association Texas experiment where it's going to be over with. But yeah, the fact that you're not really hearing that much out of the Southwest League as far as being ready for 2019 just kind of makes me wonder if it's going to happen. I was just reading recently that they were trying to get a team in Joplin. And if people can remember, the Joplin Blasters were a member of the American Association for a year or two. And they wanted to go into, like, I think Joe Beckerfield was the name
yeah.
of it?
Yep.
Yeah, they want to renovate that park a little bit and bring the Southwest League team in, but right now city officials are a little skeptical of it just because, really, there's not a solid plan behind this league right now. So I think that's going to be an interesting topic as the summer goes on as to whether we're going to see an announcement that A, the league is a go or not a go for the next summer, and will there be any established teams that are going to jump ship?
Well, for fans out there, if they do get a team into there and you've never been to Joplin to watch a game, you have to go, just because it's not only one of the most unusual fields you're ever going to see, but if you were sitting in the front row for games, you are literally eye level with the game. I mean, your head is just ground level watching from the action. So it's one of the most interesting games you're ever going to watch if you go out there to check that out. So I encourage you to do so. Kevin, Milwaukee joining the American Association in 2019. Your thoughts on that?
Well, my thoughts is, boy, I'm already going to be playing a road trip as soon as I see the schedule. Anyone that knows me personally knows I am also a very big Milwaukee Brewers fan, so I do get out to Milwaukee once or twice every summer, so I guess with the team in Franklin, I have more reason than ever to get out there. They just sounds like they're going to be breaking ground in the coming weeks here. So, yeah, and they're if announce it, they're definitely going to have a team this league, whether it's going to be a relocated team out of Wichita or if it's going to be an expansion part that we don't know anything about yet. Joining them, we'll have to find out as the summer goes on. I think it can work, but the part you have to worry about is there's a lot of baseball in the Milwaukee area right now between the Summer Collegiate Northwoods League and also Midwest League teams. So they're going to have to kind of make their mark to not get kind of lost in the mix. You also got the Milwaukee Brewers right down the road. The Brewers drive really well. They've kept their ticket prices reasonable, and they're popular even when the team's not playing well. So I'd say this team in Franklin, they're going to have to develop their own niche. So I hope they go into next year with a really solid business plan.
It'd be interesting to see if they follow one of the things the St. Paul Saints do. You and I have got to watch where there'll be a Minnesota Twins game at 1 o'clock in the afternoon on a Saturday, let's say, and then at 7 o'clock, fans could go across town and go watch the Saints play at 7. And I'd be interested to see if Franklin, Milwaukee did that same kind of deal.
Yeah, I think they would be wise to do it. I know with Milwaukee, they cross promote a bit with their Class A team. It's up in Appleton right now with the Wisconsin Timber Rattlers. So they have had a history of working with minor league teams, but we'll see if they are going to be as willing to work with an independent league team.
I'm curious, Kevin, about your thoughts about this. A lot of American Association players have been traded to Sugar Land in the Atlantic League this offseason for players to be named later, like 13 or 14, I think, at this particular point. What does that even mean? Because how does a team cover that many players to be named later?
Well, a lot of times you're going to see where guys are just going to, if they don't make Sugar Land, they'll just get returned to the team that they came from, and that'll be the player to be named later. Or lots of times, if let's say the Sugar Land's got a player they're about ready to release, and another team's got a need that in the middle of summer, then they'll kind of play their chip then. So yeah, it's pretty common practice in independent baseball. So, but what we've seen there is Pete Incaviglia has managed in the American Association. He's managing Sugarland, so he's got a pretty good book on guys in the American Association as to which ones he believes are capable of playing in the Atlantic League.
We look at players signed in affiliate ball. Obviously, we have Jake Hager, who returned back to the Brewers, James Needy, Cortland Cox, that became the first Cleveland Railroaders player to sign with an affiliate club. Wes Darvill, about a month ago, signed with the Dodgers organization, and Winnipeg had Josh Toles. So congratulations to those guys.
Yes, that's always good advertising for the league to see guys getting signed and getting a chance to make it to the show.
There are four guys signing in Mexico that we wanted to talk about. Josh Romanski was one that you mentioned. Tyler Alexander, a big loss to Fargo, heads south of the border to join Mexico. Tyler Kane joined from Wichita to head to Mexico as well. And Alonzo Harris.
It's kind of neat to, when you think about it, you got the 2017 American Association and Atlantic League Players of the Year are both going to be playing in Mexico this summer. I thought the money down in Mexico was getting to be a little scarce, but I don't know. I guess we're starting to see more guys getting signed down there, so maybe the money's good once again.
We also wanted to talk a little bit about a couple of things around Major League Baseball, especially geared around moving up the speed of games. This season, they will have it so that a team can only have 6 visits to the mound that are not pitching change related. They decide to shoot down the 20-second pitch clock. What are your thoughts about those ideas?
The visits to the mound, I guess we'll see if 6 is going to be a number that's not going to make a difference or if it will have an impact. But boy, if you get late in the game and you don't have any visits left to the mound, team brings in a pinch hitter. You know, how do you communicate with your pitcher as, okay, this guy can hit this and this and pitch them here or there. You're going to have to, I guess, rely on the brain power of the pitcher and or catcher to memorize what the hitter's strengths and weaknesses are if you don't have any mound visits left. I personally don't like it. I don't think it's gonna be much of help as far as speeding up the pace of the game. So the idea I heard, I was just reading about this yesterday, that I just, to me it'd be insane, and you're just kind of trying to reinvent the wheel. An idea someone floated was for extra innings. You could pretty much start the inning with wherever you wanted to in your order.
Let's say in the
10th inning, you could bring up your third, fourth, and fifth hitters. Because they said, well, in basketball, any other sport in overtime, you're playing your best players. Well, that's different. You're comparing apples to oranges. And yeah, I don't think the idea's got many legs to it. It's just, I don't know, it just seems like someone's just trying to reinvent the wheel.
Yeah, well, I hope that idea shot down real quick. That's a bad one. Kevin, tell us what's going on with you these days.
Well, we're a little slow in the blog area right now. I kind of want to get into that, too, because I have to kind of defend my fellow bloggers of the world. I was reading last week and discussed with a couple of people on Twitter about there's some sports websites out there that they make pretty good money. They employ bloggers. They put demand on bloggers for content. And although, yes, the bloggers do get press passes, access to the ballpark and players, these bloggers are not compensated for their time, but yet they have demands placed on them, and just kind of think it's unfair. And I think a lot of times you see the bloggers' work suffer because they're not doing a blog because it's something that they really are adamant about writing about. They're doing it just because it's something they have to do. And, you know, I guess I'll defend myself. And, yeah, I haven't had much content lately, but there really isn't much going on, and I'm not going to really take up the reader's time by putting something out there that's just not really informative or entertaining. So, yeah, if you're a sports website out there and you're making money, I think it's wise that you kind of share some love with the people that are doing the work.
I could not possibly agree more about that. I do want to add from my own side is that I've been running a column that's been 5 or 6 days a week of American Association Daily, where you can come out and find out stuff that's going on around the league. It doesn't have as Kevin's incredible insights, but if you're looking for information, there's some stuff you can get on it. Michael Schlecht joined with his podcast show, Manager of Fargo Moorhead, if you'd like to come out and listen to that. Steve Montgomery's podcast is also available, and George Samus will be picking up now more as the season is closing in. We'll also be having Brent Cleveland from the Wichita Wingnuts in his first year as manager of the team, and I believe that we'll be looking at a couple of other managers who will probably be joining with their own shows here pretty soon, too. Twitter baseball, what's happening with that?
Well, we're just kind of keeping track of the moves as teams are making them, and we are something that I guess it hasn't been involved so much in our at TWITA account, but something that's kind of popped up in the Twin Cities area yesterday and kind of goes back to my previous point about blogs. The head coach of the Minnesota Lynx WNBA basketball team is upset with The Athletic. As many of you have probably heard, there is a mega sports website out there called The Athletic, where it's kind of like a one-stop spot for your local sports page, and they employ many great writers. And the coach of the Minnesota Lynx is upset because there hasn't been much coverage of the Lynx, even though they just started during the Lynx off season. She made a point of how many people go to the games. They get like 7,000-8,000. I brought up a point to her and never got a response, but the St. Paul Saints draw 7,000-8,000 fans a night, and their media coverage in the mainstream is next to nothing. I believe Rob and I cover the Saints a heck of a lot more than the rest of the newspapers and our blogs cover the Saints at all in the Metro. So I posed the question to her. I said, do you think that maybe the Saints need a little more media coverage? And of course, I didn't get a response. So, but yeah, that was my soapbox topic on Twitter yesterday. And Rob, I got to say, your work has been excellent. I applaud your stick-to-itiveness about getting stories out on the players of the American Association during a time of the year where, you know, sometimes it can be a little tough to find a story. So, bravo to you on your work.
Well, thank you. I greatly appreciate that. I also want to send a shout-out to Lee Stecklin of the women's gold medal-winning hockey team out there in South Korea. Lee had been had worked with Bleacher for her, the first year that the organization was in place for those who use the app at St. Paul Saints and Lincoln Salt Dogs and Wichita Wingnuts games. And I know she was out there fighting for a gold for our country, so congratulations to her and the rest of the team for winning a championship.
Yes, I'd like to also take umbrage with her for not getting a goal in regulation so I could get some sleep last night. Yeah, I was kind of bleary-eyed a little bit this morning because I stayed up till 1:15, 1:30 to watch the entire shootout.
You didn't need any sleep.
Come on. Yeah, now. I guess it's over 8. Yeah, of course, that's why I kind of fell asleep this afternoon.
Awesome. Well, for Kevin Lucco, I'm Rob Panier. We thank you for joining us on This Week in the Association.